It's the I Hardly Know Her podcast, where we activate the improv power of yes and into our conversations to spark curiosity and expand our perspectives in life. Listen in as we chat with industry leaders who share their stories and skills to help inform and inspire so we can all be better individuals contributing to a better world. And remember, you don't have to be a big deal to do big things. Welcome back to another episode of the I Hardly Know Her podcast. I have my partner in improv team culture here today with me. Jeanette is joining us again, and we have been doing a lot of workshops. Like, that's a main, you know, focus of what we do with our work is we go into companies and teach them these improv rules. And we were just chatting like we do about some of the hot buttons that keep coming up. And we thought it would be really fun to share with you some of the things that are current trends and what we're seeing as successes for people, and just have a little bit of fun with the fun times we bring into the space. So welcome back to the show. It's been a few minutes since we've had you on an episode. So thanks for coming back, Jeanette.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Megan. It's been a fun and busy beginning of the year. So I'm excited to talk about what we've been doing.
Yeah, right on. Well, even in the past couple of days, we talked a lot about safety. The word safety comes up more than usual lately. And actually in a group I was working with the other day, at the very end of our workshop, we had an extra like 90 seconds. And I'm like really specific on our timing of our workshops. I'm like, I have you until this exact moment. And so I will watch my clock. And I was like, okay, we got 90 seconds left. Tell me one word that stands out to you as something that you learned or that you are going to have a personal takeaway from. And two different people, and we're talking executive level folks, they both said the word safety. Hmm. And I immediately actually thought of you, Jeanette, because I know your primary focus among the myriad of things that you focus in on, but one of those really top ones is creating psychological safety in the workplace.
Yes.
And I don't think people really notice it a lot, like how important it is. So when you hear like from a team or like people not sharing in their space, I mean, it feels like it roots initially in the space of safety. People aren't going to speak up if they don't feel safe.
First of all, I really want to point out that you commented that you gave them the last 90 seconds. You noted you had 90 seconds left in the workshop and you gave them that time. That's the first step in building psychological safety, because you're telling the people in that workshop, I respect your time. I value your time. My time is not more important than your time. And so this is my way of acknowledging and honoring that. So that's pretty cool. Ooh. So yeah. And then as far as, you know, listening, building safety, emotional intelligence, it's kind of all wrapped together. Mm-hmm. And I'm seeing a lot of people talk about emotional intelligence and emotional safety in the workplace. And it really all boils down to, these are all components of psychological safety. And there's mm-hmm. these little things that we can do every day at work, in our personal lives, in our communities that work that muscle and build that skill. So I did say the listening thing. The listening thing to me is like a big first for psychological safety.
It's huge. And I noticed that has been a really common thing, like request from customers lately mm-hmm. is when where they're mm-hmm. they're planning their events and they're talking about where their pain points are. Most of them that I've talked to lately are saying we need to really focus on listening. And I think it's interesting because I'm like, why are we having such a hard time listening? It's like, because everybody wants to talk and be heard, and then we still need to give that back. And yet it takes effort. It takes intention mm-hmm. to listen. Like, we are very busy people. Our brains mm-hmm. are super scattered with all the different things we have going on. And so it's kind of a big challenge for people to be willing to really like tune the other things out and give dedicated attention. I know you do a couple of different types of games than I do, which is what I love about like our backgrounds merge with all sorts of different things, which tells me there's endless combinations of fun that we can create in this learning space. But I want you to tell the audience about the game that you used on a recent group with the first line, last line, and mm-hmm. how that requires listening in order to be successful.
Yeah, totally. So we do this scene work where two people are working together and they have to explain how to do something like bake a cake or change a tire, something like that. And the only rule is that you have to say the first line out of your mouth has to be the last line that was said to you. And then you can add to it. And so of course this, this demonstrates yes. And right. Because you are saying the thing that was said. So that's your yes. And is adding to it. But more importantly, it is taking a moment to really comprehend what the person is saying. And it was really hard. And the people that I worked with, this company that I worked with, they were so excited afterwards. I mean, they said this was really challenging because there's parts of baking a cake, for example, that everybody knows. Everybody knows you have to take a bowl out to mix, right? Everyone knows you have to crack the eggs, but to actually have to take the moment to comprehend that that's what the person gave you, it gives you an opportunity to realize what is the next littlest piece, because we don't have to explain all of the steps to baking a cake in one sentence. Right. Mm-hmm. And we probably don't know all those steps on our own. That was another beautiful thing, is you realize that collaboration is important, because off the top of my head, I could probably tell you 85% of how to bake a cake, because I like to bake. I do a lot of baking and cooking, but there's parts of it that don't stick with me that you, Megan, know, because you know you're baking cookies and cakes with your kids all the time, and you're like, I know this is important because this is the part that, you know, my kid likes to do or whatever. And so you bring that to the table. I bring pieces to the table. It's slow, it's deliberate, and we have to do it one piece at a time.
Yeah. Oh, a piece of cake. Oh, So sort of staying with that topic, because coincidentally, in one of the yes and activities that I did the other night with a group, they start by saying they love a certain thing. I love blank is like what tees up this conversation that they're having. And the one guy was, his I love statement was I love cake. And like, apparently that was like an inside joke with the group, because he's like obsessive about how much he loves cake. And to me, I immediately pictured what I would picture as just a classic cake, like white frosting, swirly. And I used to be a cake decorator too. I don't know why.
Oh, that's right.
Thing. And then it got me thinking about when we hear the word cake, what do we think of? And so we did a really quick lap around the circle, and everyone described a little something different, whether it was the mechanics of baking a cake, like the actual steps like you were talking about, or their favorite flavor of cake, or a memory of when they had a certain cake at an event. And that is, it's like such a fun opportunity when we step into really listening and being heard at the same time too, and like honored for the different things that we experience, because every single tiny thing that exists has a slightly different twist for all of us. And I think that is so fun and cool. And instead of it being something that is like, who's right or wrong, it's like, we all get to have this opinion that is okay, even if it's different.
Yeah. And the thing that you said about listening, the important piece of listening is the other side of it, which is being heard. Oh my gosh. Like, how amazing and validating is it when you're heard, even if it's something as simple as, oh yeah, those little sugar figurines. I remember those. Like, even just saying that after somebody uses that in their description, we get a little bit of dopamine in our brain because we are feeling validated. We're feeling heard, and that makes us want to participate more. Mm-hmm. And it gives the person who validated us the, like, seeing in real time, oh, you said that and I heard it. So now the next thing I say is going to be heard.
Yeah, totally.
Cyclical in that way.
Yeah. So when you were in like the human resources, the heat of your people space, right? Because you spent a lot of time there. Were there patterns that came up often where there was breakdown in communication, or, you know, feelings are running high? It probably comes from not being heard or listening correctly. I mean, I'm just guessing because that's sort of stuff I hear, but I've never was actually in the people management scope specifically. What kinds of trends were there? Like, what were the things that you would witness from your being in that position?
Yeah. So there was a very specific example of a leadership trait that one of my directors had that I mean, it speaks perfectly to what we're talking about right now is listening. So I had a leader that knew the first step of building that safety, which is where in our weekly meetings, they would come to us and they would say, what have you got? What are you struggling with? What are your concerns? What are your frustrations? If you don't feel comfortable bringing it up here, let's have a one-on-one. Mm-hmm. So that sounds great, right? That feels very supportive. Oh, you're telling me that if I have concerns, if I have questions, I'm in a safe space, I can bring those up to you.
Mm-hmm.
However, the missing piece was we would go to that director. I would go to that director. I would bring up frustrations. I would say, I'm having trouble with this project. I don't understand this piece. I'm having trouble with this employee because, you know, I oversaw a staff of my own. I'm having trouble with this employee. I don't know how to navigate the situation. Okay, cool. They're taking notes. They're telling me they're going to follow up. No follow-up, crickets, right? Mm-hmm. So we would get to the end of a conversation of an opportunity to improve something where they have said back to me that they understand what I'm talking about. They understand my frustrations. Maybe they don't have an answer in that moment, but they're going to work with me.
Mm.
And then nothing happens, right? So they took that first step of listening. They listened to me. They gave me the platform to be heard. They appeared to be listening. They said that they heard me. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? They're kind of going through the motions. And then it's 2 months, it's 6 months. And this thing has never been resolved. I don't have the confidence to go back and do something similar to that. I don't have the confidence to come back to them and come back with another opportunity for improvement or, you know, an issue I'm having. And so I think that's really common. I think it's really common right now because psychological safety, emotional intelligence, it's in the zeitgeist. People are talking about it in a lot of different, you know, ways. Human resources, people, culture, company culture, people, everyone is talking about this. Leaders are talking about it. And it feels like to me like the new DEI, where people are saying like, we know we need this. This is what we need to do, right? I'm doing it. I'm going through the motions.
Yes.
But they're stopping at that beginning piece of, I'm going to hear out your frustrations. I'm going to let you be vulnerable. But then I'm not really going to follow through. And we're going to be more cagey, you know, as employees, as team members. Now we've been burned. Like before we were thinking, oh, I didn't have the opportunity. Now we're thinking, oh, I have this opportunity. Oh, but it didn't happen the way I thought it was supposed to happen. Now I'm, I don't like to use this term because of guns, but I'm gun shy now, right? I don't want to go there again because I've been burned.
Does listening even really count? This just came to my mind as you were talking. I was like, does it even count if there's no action?
Right.
If there's no what's next established?
It is
going through the motions. And there's such a difference. I know there's times in my life where I've shared something and I know I was really heard by the way the person was listening. Mm-hmm. And then there's been times where I'm talking and it's like lights are on and nobody's home. And just sort of putting with zero intention to invest in a collaborative solution.
Yeah. It makes me think of, you know, book reports as a kid. I didn't like to read a lot of genres of literature. And so, you know, you have to read. So I read the words on the page. I promise you, I read every single word on every single page. But come time to report back what I read, no idea. Mm. Because I'm not comprehending, right? They're not listening for comprehension. They're listening to go through the motions.
Yes. So in what ways do we overcome that? What are the tools we get to dangle out there so if it is happening, I mean, I almost want to know what can we equip people with who are hearing this and they're relating to that? What are some soft or maybe firm boundaries in the conversation dynamic that we get to do to make sure there is follow-up? or to learn if that is a place where we maybe just are, you know, we're not going to end up being there for that long. Sometimes the discovery is you got to go somewhere else eventually.
Yeah. I mean, I use this in professional settings. I use this in my theater company. I'm currently on a sketch team, which is an independent sketch team. We get together once a week, and I am the person in the group at the end of the meeting that says, okay, to recap, this is what you are bringing to the table. This is what I'm bringing to the table. These are the questions we still have. So I think that that is helpful. I also compare it to, I don't know what the percentage is, but you're way more likely to remember someone's name if you say it right back to them, right?
Right.
So it's the first thing said, last thing said. You're telling me what your frustration or your problem or your query is. I'm repeating it back to you to say, I heard it. It's helping me ingest it too by telling you that I heard it. And then at the end of this conversation, maybe just like a quick recap, you know, like greatest hits of the meeting. So we know how to move forward.
Did you just come up with that?
I think so.
Oh my gosh. I'm writing that down. So I wrote down a couple things because this is amazing. And of course, we're ever evolving here at Improv Team Culture with our fabulous deliverables to help you thrive in your workspace. Greatest hits of the meeting. That is so good. The other thing that you said, which I don't know if that you kind of brought it back to one of the improv games of first line, last line, the simplicity of saying, okay, to recap. So you are bringing it back around. I was even thinking that could be a cool thing at the end of a storytelling exercise or something. You know, when there's the lineup of five or six people and you have them talking until you pull your hand away, and then the next person has to pick up exactly where that person left off. And it's kind of fast paced and everyone's adrenaline is kind of running. And so even to enhance that listening skill too is okay to recap, you know, like making sure the audience is getting enough out of it. And same with the people that are actually participating, because it's really needs to be everybody. It's all the things. Oh my gosh, how fun. Also, do you want to know a little side note? In personal development land for myself as a speaker, we're going to tangent here for a second. I am so aware of words, right? Including the words that I cannot stop repeating ad nauseum. And I use literally way too much. And I use the word like way too much.
Me too.
And as we've been going today, because I'm really trying to correct that for myself, I've been making a tick mark every time I say the word like, which maybe I'm not going to count that one because I'm talking about it. Yeah. And I'm going to make myself do a push-up for every time I have said that word.
Wow. In my descriptive
spaces, because it is,
it's good.
Making me crazy. My listening skills, as we're talking about listening, the thought had occurred to me too, is that when we take accountability for ourselves and listen to ourselves, we actually have a lot of opportunity for growth too. When we hear ourselves complaining a lot about the same thing and there's no change, it goes back to exactly what you were saying with, if you go to a manager or whatever and share an idea and nothing changes and it just kind of fizzles out. We do that on an individual basis, I think, a lot, where we just have these patterns. And until we really listen and go, what am I saying? What are the things I'm constantly hearing myself talk about? For better or worse. If I'm complaining a lot, what is something that I can do to shift that? Or if there's something that I keep talking about, I wish I could do this. Why are we not taking the steps towards something that we're clearly passionate about?
Anyway, yeah, exactly. No, I love that, because it's so much easier to see in other people. So I think it's really important to call yourself out. I think that's beautiful. Self-awareness and real commitment to self-improvement, right? That you're doing that, because I have a lot of people I care about and they come to me about HR related issues at their job all the time. And they say, is this legal? You know, is this okay? Kind of stuff. And a lot of times my reaction is, if I've heard them say the same thing over and over again, my reaction is, it's not really worth your time to ask that question anymore. You know, spend your time maybe looking for a new opportunity at that point, right? Because that's something too that we're not talking about, because I do think that you want to make the change. The easiest change is going to be within the current structure you're in, right? And so that's where we come in. We love to come in and help teams build that safety, build that camaraderie, because it's going to be easier and more, I guess just easier. It's going to be more better. It's going to be easier to fix the structure that you're already in than to move and change, of course. But that is also an option, right? And so that's something that you need to look at yourself. Is the problem that I'm facing over and over again something that can be changed? Is it something I'm doing? Like, am I the part of the problem here, right? Am I not listening? Am I not creating a safe space for the people around me? Or have I come back to this same frustration over and over again? So maybe my energy would be better spent changing what's around me, changing my environment. Mm. So, I think that's poignant, and definitely a tangent as well. But yeah, I think that's poignant to be reflective about. You know, it's not always going to work within the structure you're in, but that's the first more better place to start.
Yeah, totally. I love it. You're just full of like catchphrases and new new ways of seeing things. I love that. I'm trying to think if there's a way to harvest this information. So thinking back to when you were in like management space of people, do you remember either an exact moment or maybe a series of experiences where what you know about improv and what you were experiencing in playtime were such a clear solution for you, like where you just knew this is what is driving me to help people with these rules of play because of those moments that you experienced? Like, were there some ahas of
I think the
solution is there, you know?
Yeah, I think a lot of times in the HR space, I noticed more when I was bringing someone new in, whether it was bringing someone new into my team or I was hiring someone new altogether into the organization. I definitely saw so many opportunities because that's a clean slate in a lot of ways. So establishing that, you know, this is how we roll in this job, team, department, whatever, you know, we let people ask questions. We laugh at our mistakes kind of stuff. And so laughing at my mistakes, being really vulnerable about my mistakes as a leader was something that I mean, I've always been like that. I think that's why I love improv, because I feel like the stakes are lower, because if I do screw up really big, I'm like, well, I was making it up on the top of my head. What do you expect from me? You know?
Right.
But I do think that mentality helps me in a professional setting, because I don't take myself too seriously. And if I demonstrate that I'm not taking myself too seriously, it allows other people to be vulnerable, to be fallible, to make mistakes. And so bringing somebody new in, or having a one-on-one with a supervisor that, you know, I'm mentoring, and coming to the table and saying, I screwed this thing up. Like, I totally missed the mark on this thing that I was working on. Maybe asking them, how would you have handled that? And so that gives them not only the sense that I'm willing to make a mistake, but that I value their opinion, even if they're like lower than me on the ladder. Right. So, and I got that from improv, because in improv, you can't take anything too seriously. You have to be willing to fail, and you can't really get better unless you can look back and say, all right, why didn't that work? You know, or why didn't that work as good as I expected it to? Or why didn't that in improv? Why didn't that get a laugh? Right. But in the professional space, it's like, why didn't that work? It's okay that it didn't work. It's the first time I did it.
Yes.
Like, why didn't it work?
Okay. So you just brought up two things that I want to talk about. One of them is going to be the mentorship space. The other one is, why didn't that work? What you just said. And I've gone through a couple of different seasons of improv training with different groups, and when I used to have my own troupe that I was kind of the ringleader for, And it was very volatile, the conversation of whether or not we should have notes after shows.
Wow.
And some of us really liked it. And then others were like, we're just here to have fun. Oh, crap. I'm just writing down all my tick marks.
All your push-ups.
Yep. I'll have to do an Instagram live or something of my push-up punishment. Because people would really take things personally, and yet it was there to help us get better. Mm-hmm. And I've had good experiences and less than good experiences too, because I remember having one friend of ours who came to watch our show. He was in a different troupe, and he offered up notes to us, and it was just very rake over the coals vibe and not productive. And there, you know, sometimes it was just interesting to feel like, where can we find something that is in order for us to improve? You know,
yeah.
Do you guys had notes in places that you trained, or was that not a common thing?
So I find this conversation interesting. It's a conversation I'm having with my current team, actually,
because, oh, really?
So if you don't come from a theater background, which most improvisers don't, to be honest, like, you didn't come from a theater background. I mean, you were
I did a couple
and musical, and
a formal training though.
Yeah. So I went to school for theater, and then I find improv, and in theater, you're kind of expected to take notes. I mean, receive notes, I guess I should say. And so I find it really interesting in improv because, you know, in theater, in scripted theater, you don't get notes after the show opens. But that's a whole different ball game, right? Mm-hmm. You're doing rehearsed material. And with improv, it's always a work in progress. You can always get better. You can always improve. And so I think a lot of people that don't have that background, they get defensive when they get notes after a show. And I've just always been trained in theater. You take the note. I mean, if you don't like the note, and I tell all of my teams that I coach when I teach, you know, improv in the theater space, I always tell people, I'm going to give you notes, but I'm just one person. Like I'm not the gospel of improv. So if I give you a note you don't like, just say thank you, internalize it, or let it go out in one ear, out the other. Like, I don't need to know that. Like, you need to know and hold yourself accountable for how you're going to use that information.
Yes.
And so, and people that get defensive about those notes, I do find that, like, maybe they're not used to being in a safe space where everybody's making mistakes.
Yeah.
Because in the workspace, we don't always feel like our leaders are making mistakes. They don't really own up to those mistakes. And so when they give us notes, we get defensive because it equals bad, right? Like notes equals bad.
Right.
But in the improv space, and I would argue in the workspace, I mean, you got to be malleable. You're always learning. You're always growing. And so, yeah, if it's not established from the top. So I would argue also in these situations where people aren't receiving notes in improv or in the workspace, the leadership has to kind of set that tone.
Yeah. And I do think it should be both as well. And of course, when we do coaching for speakers, the same thing is true in that space too. And the notes, I recently attended a speaker training because as a speaker coach, I want to keep stretching myself and being very open to being coached so I can continue to improve. Mm-hmm. And part of it is also noticing the things that really go right so we can try to repeat those good things too. So it's not always a negative thing.
Right.
There's times that some of the notes would be a really positive thing that one of us didn't notice, yet someone else observed how it connected with the audience or how it shifted the energy. Mm-hmm. And so it can be really a well-rounded space of, not that it has to always be, let me give you the, because I don't want people to feel like I have to give them a really great compliment and then I'm going to chew them
compliment sandwich.
Yep, that stupid, freaking, yeah. Ooh, compliment sandwich. I've never heard it called that.
Really?
When I was in corporate, in banking, I learned it as the praise sandwich.
Okay.
Same diff.
Yeah.
But I like compliment sandwich. Anyway, it was just as important to me though, to hear the things that I didn't notice were a strength. So I could lean into that more. And actually in some recent coaching that I had in a speaker training, I thought it was interesting because I was very open to the coaching and I had someone record it so I could watch myself later and see what I wanted to do to improve. And one of the main critiques was that I pace a lot, which I'm very aware of when I'm on stage. I move a lot. Mm-hmm. And like to your point that, that if someone hears, what did you say about that? That was like, you guys, you listeners, are you keeping track now of every time I slip in the L-I-K-E? Because I was already thinking about the fact that I know I move and there's certain points where I pause for emphasis and I lean towards the audience and I use hand gestures for certain things. And I did, I watched my tape and I was like, I did that. I actually did. I definitely, you guys, my words are hurting today. I definitely moved from both sides. It was a long, narrow room though. And so in my mind, I'm trying to connect with the people. And yet I still understand that is a challenge for me. And I have historically been so like ping pongy ball that I can't keep myself still. Yeah. Now I'm so distracted by the volume of time when I'm saying the word like I can't pull it all together. But I think notes are really powerful. All of that is to say what you're saying, set the tone, bring in that opportunity for growth and knowing it's really to help us be better.
Yeah, I think what you said about positive notes is also important and bringing it back to a theater background. Directors are pretty much taught in school, at least when I took directing, to only give positive notes. And I felt weird about that because I don't necessarily, I'm a person that's thinking, give me the harsh, you know, give me the harsh criticism. I want to hear it.
Yeah.
Deprecate me. but deprecate all over me. But if you use that mentality mixed in with we're always improving, it's a live organism, improv, and so is work dynamics because it's all improv. I mean, you've never had that exact meeting about a project in that stage of the project with those people. I mean, it's all improv, right? And so being willing, like you said, to take the good with the bad, give those positive notes. I really also was deliberate as a leader. And when I'm coaching, I'm deliberate in this way as well. When I give a good note, I say, you know, I'm going to take that with me. I'm going to use that. I'm going to steal that. And it's not really stealing, right? It's a form of flattery and to impersonate or what's the term? The highest form of flattery is
imitation
is the highest form of flattery. Yeah. And so when I have a leader in any space that tells me, oh, that was really good, I'm going to try to do that next time. Mm-hmm. That's a huge compliment to me. So, So giving those notes are really important too, instead of just saying, just kind of going through the motions of, yeah, okay, we're going to do that. That sounds good. But taking that moment to listen, right? Comprehend it and say, that's cool. Let's use that. Let's move forward with that.
Totally. I think the pro tip in there is listening to when other people are being coached as well, because we can maybe avoid some of those steps or like you said, adopt a new way of doing something that you can see works for someone else or another situation. I learn so much in any coaching environment that I'm in, even when it's like not my turn to be coached, I listen to whatever their coaching is, even if it's a different product or service, a totally different dynamic. And even with other speakers, I watched so many other speakers getting coached at that event I went to recently. And I really took a ton of notes to just be aware of those and think, do I do those things? How can I continue to expand? So, and a lot of times we want to check out when someone else is getting talked to, or, oh, that's not my problem, or that's not my thing. but the collaboration can continue to really gel when we are listening and learning from each other and having to be like team sport on all that.
Yeah, absolutely. There's in the workspace or in improv, there's something, an example I thought of when you were saying that is I used to, as an improviser, a crutch for me was to curse.
Oh.
Because, and I see a lot of people do it. I see a lot of young improvisers do it because we're nervous, we're panicking that we haven't said something funny yet. So we curse, right? Because we know we're going to get a reaction and it's not necessarily the reaction we want, but we don't know that at the time. We don't realize that we're getting that dopamine hit when we hear people react to that cursing.
Yeah.
Then I got cast on a team in a clean theater, like a G theater, you know, it's open to all ages. And they said, we don't curse, keep everything G, PG at most. And now in my coaching and my teaching, and even in corporate environments, when people say things maybe racy or a little off color to get a reaction, I see it so much in other people. And it reminds me of like, I know what that feels like because they're doing it because they're insecure. They're trying to get a reaction. It's not going to be the reaction that they ultimately want and serves them in that situation. But I learned so much from watching other people do that after I was forced not to do that. And now when I play with people that do that, I get a little ick, you know, because I know why they're doing it. And I feel for them. I definitely empathize with them, but I also realize, oh, okay, this is coming from this place. So, you know, maybe you have some learning and growing to do, but I am learning from every single time I see that.
Yeah.
And I'm more self-aware of the times that I probably still do it in a different version. I wouldn't say that I go to cursing as much. I do have a sailor's mouth as a human. Like that's a normal part of my, that's me, but I don't like doing it on stage. And so I probably do something else that's similar to that. And so just constantly, being aware, be humble and realize that you can learn from other people's notes. You can learn from other people's failings. Yeah. All of that.
Yeah. I love that. Okay. So one of the other topics as we're on the home stretch here that you brought up was mentor when you were saying you were mentoring other leaders. And so I want to talk about mentorship in general, both in the workplace. And then maybe if you have a mentor experience when you were in theater or in improv, because you've been so heavily immersed in that space and people can be really guarded sometimes with their knowledge and their skills because they feel like sharing is going to take away from their opportunities for success. So let's dive into mentorship and what that means to you, as I want to make sure we cover both you being a mentor and opportunities where you have been mentored and what that has brought into your life.
That's so serendipitous. I just had a conversation with someone 2 days ago that I looked to as a mentor. So I am currently, I just became the education director of my local theater that I'm a performer at. And so I coordinate all the curriculum now for our training center and we're looking to revamp it. And so I reached out to a former director and mentor from Chicago, Kevin Mullaney. He's not a super big name in the improv space, but he has had his hand in so many things. It's crazy to me that he's not a bigger name, but he's not that kind of person. Like he never really did it for the accolades, which I think is an important thing for me to look to him as a mentor, because there is this humility about him that I am drawn to. So I reached out to him recently to ask him about helping me build out a curriculum for this theater space. And he is not as guarded about the intellectual property as some people are. And it's just a funny thing because improv, I mean, it's made up, right? It's all made up. And there's definitely games and exercises that we all do. I mean, we do some similarly, you and I, but there's even ones that we do completely different because we learned, you know, from different schools and different improv theory. And so they've been passed down through the generations and nobody really owns them, but some people feel guarded about mm-hmm. letting people use that information. And so he came to me and said, you know, there's forms, there's long forms that I have put my name on that I think that I invented. But as far as the games that I use, the exercises I use to get to that final product, he's like, I want more people to know that stuff. You know, yeah. I want to share that with as many people as possible. So if you're going to bring that to Albuquerque and teach people, that means we're going to have more performers and more people in this, you know, greater community. And so he has been a great mentor in that way, that he doesn't feel cagey about it. And he's not making his, you know, money, his primary income doesn't come from improv. And that might be a part of it. But for a long time, it was, you know, he developed a training center. He hired me to help build a curriculum for a training center when I lived in Chicago. And he, you know, he says, you have part ownership over that stuff as well, even though I have my name on it. If you didn't use my name necessarily, but use the stuff that you put into it, I would never go through and, you know, double check that you're doing stuff on the up and up, because it's all, I mean, it's all like information that can only, we can only be better if we share it, that kind of.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I feel like it is a huge space of co-creation because of our different perspectives and being able to pool our minds together, all the different things that we've learned and those different perspectives. It also brought to mind that sometimes I work with clients who, the bigger the company or the more specific their product is, for example, mm-hmm. the more guarded they tend to be mm-hmm. about their content. So even more so lately, I've been signing NDAs, and there's different things where I'm like, should I be doing that for my stuff? So that, and yet, you know, I don't own improv. I've constantly remind right. myself of that. Lots of people will send me things and clips if they hear someone else talking about yes and in a different context. It actually got me thinking the other day when I saw someone sent me a thing about yes and just for conversational tools. And it was not even mentioned as an improv rule. It was simply that the yes and was being shared, which is totally fine. And it really had me wondering if yes and was actually originated by an improviser, or was that a general concept that may have existed in humanity as a positive thing that became by choice a founding principle of improv right. because of its power? I don't know. I mean, I've heard yeah. lore of improv and read different books, and of course I've heard about various things of how it's been established officially. Yet there's billions of people that have come and gone on this planet, and even our most original ideas are probably not 100%.
Yeah, absolutely. And he brought up this example and I laughed about it. So I have a 2-person hip hop improv group called Mountain Coast, and we were driving to hang out before a festival, and we were brainstorming an exercise we could do that would also play as like a short form game for us on stage. And we came up with a game, and we're super excited about it. And we performed it at this festival, and multiple people came up to us afterwards that were improvisers, and they're like, that was such a cool game. I've never seen that before. And we were like, yeah, we made it up on the road. Well, then fast forward, I took a musical improv intensive, and the teacher named it, and the teacher is somebody from my community. So I was like, oh my gosh, she named this game that we came up with. Like, she really liked it. Well, then my partner, Megan, who lives in Denver, completely different community, completely different space. She went to, I think she just went to a rehearsal with her short form team, and somebody taught that game. And she came back to me and she was like, Jeanette, I don't think we made that game up. Ooh. And I was like, you know, I don't know that we did either, because it was listed in this musical improv workshop I took, and I was flattered, but I didn't say anything because, you know, I'm not that, that's not what I'm about anyways. I would never make a big deal of it. But some people thought that we made that game up because they had never seen it before. And I had never seen it, but you know, it's all swirling around. I probably have heard somebody do that and didn't realize that they were doing it in that context.
Right. Some slight variation. Well, yeah. I remember having that moment too. We were doing a house party for like a wedding or anniversary. I don't remember. Huge backyard, beautiful stage. It was so fun. And as the troupe and I, we were carpooling over, I came up by accident with a game, you know, with just the dynamic that was happening in the car. So we tried it that night and it was a hit and we started doing it. And other troops in town started doing the same thing and called it exactly the same thing as we did too. And you know, then since then, this has been many years ago now, I have seen certain ones that are very similar, you know, yeah, if not totally exact and just called something different. And I think that's what has made me feel like I can loosen my white knuckle grip on my ideas having to be original and really lean into wanting more people to learn. As you were saying, we want more people to know these principles. The world is a better place when people activate improv rules and that playful mindset. And the same thing goes for like our speaking clients, is that if they have a topic that maybe gets talked about by other people, people more famous than them, people that have a different industry expertise, it doesn't matter because not everyone knows all those people. And the people in your sphere are going to hear your way of saying it.
Right.
And sometimes we need to hear the same thing over and over. So it's kind of goes into that. And to bring it back around to when you became in a position to be a mentor for other people, I feel like that's something that really you have to have that in your heart, that it's a win-win when we pass on the information we know and we support other people. So you talked a little bit about you having a mentor. Tell me a little bit about what it's been as an experience for you to be in the mentor role for other people.
Yeah. So one opportunity I had was I was specifically designated to a high school student to be a mentor in the art space during COVID. I have a friend that works for a nonprofit that helps students prepare for college. And so that was a really special thing because, I mean, what am I trying to say? It has a lot of weight to it because I feel a lot of responsibility to do right by this person, right? And so in that space, and when I've taught improv, and then even going into being a manager of a whole department, and so essentially mentoring my sub managers or my regional managers under me, I feel like I mentor a lot like I teach improv, which is I establish base rules. You know, I say, this is where I'm coming from. I got to where I'm at because I took a path, but there's countless paths, right? And so you have to take what serves you from what I'm giving you, and you have to leave everything else, like I said, in one ear, out the other. So definitely that whole idea of notes, taking feedback, that's how I established that relationship. And I try as much as possible to be humble, and it might be like a psychology trait, but turning it back on the person and say, well, how are you handling that? How are you going to do that? Let's hear that first. Let me listen to that and then maybe put my spice or flavor on top of it. Because, you know, nobody's coming to any situation as a blank slate, and I'm going to learn more about how I can help them, how I can mentor them when I find out what their baseline is.
Yes. Yeah, so true. So listeners, as we bring this to a close, wherever you are on your journey, you're exactly where you're supposed to be. We appreciate that you are tuning in. And I feel like I continue to learn. And that's why I love spending time with people like you, Jeanette, and having mentors and coaches and trying to return that favor to other people. Because the learning possibilities are so endless as we keep taking steps forward. We might even look at the same principle or tool or whatever concept differently as we gather more information. And to me, that feels really exciting and hopeful and encouraging. And it's the fuel that keeps my improv tank rolling. Thanks for being on another episode with me, Jeanette. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in. If you are enjoying our episodes, I would super love for you to subscribe. And if you have listened to a couple of them, I think it gives you that opportunity to leave a raving review, which is very helpful for us to get into other people's ear holes. So wishing you lots of light and love and laughter out there. And yeah, thanks again, Jeanette.
Thanks, Megan. Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to the I Hardly Know Her podcast. For information about leadership workshops, public speaker training, and all things Kooky Megan, check out improvteamculture.com. We'll catch you next time.